And we're back.
It's like we never left.
But oh, did we leave, that is.
Is that rhetorical? I can't tell. Is this rhetorical?
It's like we're back at the school bench. And after the holiday.
Bench?
The school bench? Didn't they have benches?
Desks.
We just had a bench.
Oh.
The one.
It was hard being Norwegian.
Yeah. And we're back at the school bench. Or school desk. And the teacher with the pulpit. That's one of my favorite English words, by the way. Pulpit.
Well, it would be, but...
No. That's a pulpit, right?
No, only if you're a priest.
Okay. But you have that...
Did you go to a religious school?
In fact, I did. Or it wasn't meant to be religious, but it kind of were.
Not completely against something somewhere?
Absolutely. But,
we're going to have to get into that another day. Okay.
But I remember at the university, we called the stuff in front of the auditorium pulpits. When we had the... Sort of the dissertations, no, the defenses in English.
When you stand and there's like this thing and you sort of stand at it.
But I'm...
A dais would be the kind of the English. It's not an English
I'm
word.
Thinking about roster. Rostrum, perhaps.
Rostrum makes more sense, but that isn't a word I would have used in that context either. A rostrum is like a thing you present prizes on, right? Like a podium. Are we just going to take a little tour through Latin and Greek, kind of? Let's just make this the Latin and Greek episode. Let's just do words. You're back at school after the holidays.
Yeah. And what's the first thing your teacher assigns you to do?
Well, I think it depends how old you are. And if you're younger, I guess it's like, what did you do on your holidays? Write me an essay. Draw me some pictures. You're going to draw pictures? That's really great for the podcast medium. Draw some pictures.
I will draw some word pictures.
Very nice.
But what did you do for your holiday when you were at that age?
We went to the... Czechoslovakia a lot.
Okay.
So that was kind of unusual. We came to Norway one year. I was very lucky we got to travel a little bit. So.
What kind of stuff did you do in Czechoslovakia?
Well, half my family lived there, so we just did regular stuff. Played ping pong in the garage when it was raining. Bothered my grandmother's rabbits that she kept. Went visited aunts and uncles. Ate cake. Had name days. Being a very Catholic country, they celebrate saints' days. Like if you're named after a saint, and I guess nearly everybody is, directly or indirectly, you get like cake and presents as a kid. It's cool. It's like having two birthdays. That sort of stuff. What did you do?
Well, I guess there were a lot of like scout camps and I guess hiking. And almost every summer we went to my grandparents' cabin, like in the south of the country.
Cool.
And yeah.
Was it kind of basic cabin or?
Yeah, kind of. No electricity.
Running water?
Nope, there was a pump.
Cool.
And a wooden porta pro.
Yes.
Utedo. And you had to cook by gas.
You just reminded me that my great grandmother, who lived in then Czechoslovakia, had no running water in her house. It was a pretty old house. And she had to go to the end of the street for a while and just pump it out of the well. And she had this big old kind of Aga-style wood stove. And it was pretty kind of basic. Anyway, different times. But now we come back and we've done grown-up holidays, kind of.
Yeah, we grown up. We make our own holidays.
Yeah.
We decide what to do.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Going on a holiday like...
Yeah, it is.
Actually. Under your own terms is pretty great. I think your holiday was more interesting, so I'm tempted to do mine first, and then we've got as much time as is left for yours, and I'll just be quick.
I got more notes, at least.
You got way more notes. If that's any indication of anything. I had a really Norwegian holiday. At least I think it was a very Norwegian holiday. I mean, I spent most of that time in Norway, which in itself is pretty Norwegian, right?
I guess so.
But a lot of people, when I speak to people and around the office, like lots of people were just staying in Norway for their holiday. Lots of people were not going anywhere. So that seems kind of, I don't know how typical that is, but.
There's a word for that even.
Is it a staycation?
Because oh, yeah.
Don't use that word. That's a terrible word.
Why?
That's just cheesy, man. So mostly we did that. We had a couple of sets of visitors come, so that kind of took up some of the time. And we got to be tourists again in our own backyard, which is what we do when people come to visit, right? Is kind of go to museums. Everybody wants to go to the Viking Ship Museum, right? So we bought like annual membership there and we just go there with people. We've now clocked that if you go in the last 40 minutes, there's no one there. It's great. If you go the rest of the day, it's full of cruise ship people. It's unbearable.
Oh, those cruise ship people.
I talked about this before. They come in tranches.
Cruise sheep people.
See what we did there. Hmm. Why don't you just call them sheeple and then we can belong to a whole other part of the internet?
It sounds very typical for a staycation to go in Viking museums and scoff at the sheeple.
Is that a good traditional Norwegian holiday pastime?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice. And cool.
Have you been there so often that you now can function as the guide?
Basically, yeah.
And do you give the official history or your alternative history?
I give whatever I can remember from what's written on the wall.
I guess most of your visitors are from the UK.
One set was from the UK, one set was from Sweden.
From Sweden?
They wanted to see the Viking ships too. They thought they were pretty cool.
Hmm. But the Swedes, they had their own Viking ships.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, they wanted to see the Viking ships too. They do have their own, but they thought ours were pretty cool. So that was cool. And then with the British visitors, we did the Viking ships again. They just wanted to see stuff, so we just walked around a lot. That's really nice. And asked a lot of cool questions. People come and ask really good questions. It's great. That's my favourite visitors, actually. They come and ask really difficult questions that I can't answer about Norway.
Such as?
Why do some of the vehicles have green plates? Which we looked up, and it's got to do with if you have it's kind of being like lastebil. Like it means that you have, you know, storage capacity like a van or a lorry.
Yeah, so it's typically vehicles that you use for work to transport stuff.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is that these type of vehicles are just registered for two seats. So you just have room for one person more, and that means that you pay less of a yearly fee.
Okay, nice. I should stress that the Swedish visitors also asked very good questions. One of them was only six, and she asked great questions like, how do you get your own island? What do the Vikings eat?
You take it.
Very Viking response, thank you. So that was cool. And the other thing we did, which was super touristy, was there's a ski jump at Holmenkollen, which is like the big Oslo ski jump. It's huge. And you can zip line down it in the summer. So we did that. That was cool. And very mellow. Like it looks like you're just going to be terrified to death. And actually the whole thing is just like, yep, I'm on a zip line. This is cool. I can see everything.
I'm still on a zip line.
Yep, still on a zip line. Yep. So it was surprisingly chilled out as an experience, but it was also very fun to do.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. And then the other things we did were we went and looked after somebody's cat. we did it. One of our colleagues has a cat and didn't want to put it in kennels. Do you call that here?
Yeah.
And so they live out of town, not quite in a kind of a place that would be a hütte, but like almost. But it's really nice. It's like a very fancy hütte with everything that you would really want. But it's out of town and quiet. The thing that we really, really wanted to get away from this holiday was Norwegian drilling. Because we live quite centrally and the drilling does not stop when you're on holiday. They're not on holiday. So the digging starts. You get woken at 7 by a guy driving a tractor over the speed bumps on our street with a trailer, and the tractor goes bang and the trailer goes bang. And you're like, well, I'm awake now. Thanks. And then the drilling starts. So we thought it would be really nice to get away from that, you know, live somewhere quiet. So we lived in a very, very chilled out, not even suburb of Norway. It's almost like being in the country for a week. That was really nice. And we did kind of being in the country things like sea kayaking, which is cool. And it's the first time I've done that. And not kayaking, but the sea kayaking bit. What else did we do? Went for walks, ate lots of wild berries, invented a new sport or a kind of training system. FlyFit TM.
FlyFit.
FlyFit. Yeah, it's very catchy. It's going to catch on, I think. It's very simple. You have to keep moving at all times. You can sweat as much as you want. You cannot stop moving, basically. If you stop moving, the horse flies will come and bite you. So, like, whatever form of exercise you're doing, you basically just have to keep doing it to get away from the flies. And that's the only rule. It's incredibly effective.
I think I've done that, actually. Do you have your own gear or something?
We should market some, I think. I think it's a marketing opportunity waiting to happen, so yeah.
You lack motivation? FlyFit! Yeah.
Yeah, see, it works. Unlike you can
get up and get moving.
And you can do it. There's so many different ways you can do it, right? Like, you can go running in the forest. You can go walking in the forest. You can cycle in the forest. Or, you know, like, out in the country, basically. It's for being outdoors.
So wait, there's so many opportunities here. You can start your own FlyFit training center, both for the sort of the human participants, but also for the flies.
When you say human participants, it makes it sound like a gigantic experiment. Here, just sign this, would you? Please, it's binding, obviously. Can we just take your blood sample? Thanks.
Yeah, so you looked after a cat, so am I now talking to the Chris with or without toxoplasmosis?
I'm very itchy. It's hard to say. Seriously, I was awake until like 1 in the morning scratching. I don't think that's the cat's fault, though.
Do you feel the urge to have more cats?
No.
Hmm.
No. Cats also like to wake you up at 7. Not even because they like, you know, they don't need food. There is food. They just want to say hi.
Do cats like stuff, really?
Who knows what cat's like? Hmm. It's a lovely cat, I've got to say. Like, if I was going to cat sit for any cat, that would be the cat. He's very cool.
Okay, so I'm talking to the Chris with toxoplasmosis.
No. I like dogs. But this is a decent cat. Yeah.
Control question.
Mm.
When you had the visitors, you mentioned that you felt like it's almost like you're tourists in Oslo again.
Mm.
But did you feel more or native, sort of, I'm the ambassador of the city now, or a bit more on sort of their side of the equation?
That's really hard to answer. I mean, we've been having visitors on and off since we moved here. So, like, I'm almost always in a position of knowing more about Oslo than they do, I think.
Yeah, but have you started to take things for granted that they obviously don't?
Probably. Very hard to think of examples. I'll have a think about that. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Probably.
Hmm.
I guess sidebar, celebrated a year being here. Hmm. In the middle of the summer.
Did you have Brunost?
Almost certainly, which is obviously a daily thing. It's a way of life. Yeah, so that was kind of, but it feels like a technicality. I commuted back to the UK for 2 more months after moving here, so like it's not real. The end of September, beginning of October is like, that feels like the real anniversary, but technically this was a year since we moved, so that was cool. But weird. It feels like a long time, but also not that long. And the other thing we did was go to Sweden, which is also a very Norwegian thing to do.
Yeah, it is actually.
In the summer.
Did you bring home lots of bacon?
No, don't laugh at me, right? We brought home chocolate, which is way cheaper to buy there, and alcohol-free beer because it was on sale and we were passing. That was all. So it was like the worst Harry tour ever. It was like the most, like, for some context.
Well, you get points for for candy, but what's the deal with alcohol-free beer?
I like drinking it. I'm shit at drinking, so, like... If I want a beer, most of the time it'll be an alcohol-free one.
If you had less alcohol-free beer and more just beer, you would be better than in... I'm losing my voice now. You had been better at drinking.
This is what happens when we take a three-week break from podcasting. You're like, you lose all your muscle tone in your throat.
Yeah.
Well, it depends what you're doing on holiday, but yeah, sorry. I like to pour a beer at the end of the day, but I don't always want it to be a beer, so...
Well, okay.
That's my vice. Deal with it. Like, accept that and accept me, okay? Yes, I know I'm a flawed human being, but that's my vice. It's really Norwegian vice, like something that's not even bad for me. Yeah, well, I cycled a lot as well on my fancy single-speed bike. I went up and down a lot of hills, mostly escaping from flies.
So a fly fit comes in sort of different...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, you can, you know, you can. It's very free.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's very simple. The premise is very simple. Sweat a lot. Keep moving.
In humid environments, I guess.
Howsoever it comes, there are still flies. I've been bitten by almost every kind of biting insect in Norway this holiday.
That is also a very Norwegian summer thing to do.
Yeah, thanks. I try. I think I really kind of threw myself into this. I tried very hard to embrace the Norwegian holiday spirit. I think I succeeded on the whole. I should have brought more alcohol back from Sweden. That's probably my major failing.
Yeah, it's very important to bring, if not exactly, a bit over quota.
Is the quota the same as when you fly in? It's like 6 bottles of wine or whatever, 2 bottles of spirits. Yeah. Either or, I think. Yeah. Okay. I'll try harder next time. We were on a train. I didn't really have to carry all that crap. Right. So that was my holiday. I tried to be very Norwegian. We thought about going away, but I was like, you know what? I'm done having new experiences for like 3 weeks. Can I just have a quiet time to absorb like the entire last year, which has been quite new experience intensive. And also it costs £1 million to fly to Japan right now. So, I thought maybe something cheaper would be good. And it was. It was really nice.
So you feel that you have absorbed?
Nah. Not even remotely. But
it sounds like you managed to not think of work and relax, perhaps, and tune out?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Like, my brain wanted to do stuff. And, you know, like you said before, when you stop working... your brain goes, hey, I've got all these ideas. Hey, you don't have anything else to think about. Hey, have you thought about writing this blog post? Have you thought about... Yeah, so I just let it freewheel and do what it wanted. And some of the time that was about work and some of the time it wasn't. I read some books. I'm nearly finished Norse Mythology, the Neil Gaiman, and I read the whole of Naive Super by Erlend Loe. You're looking at me with a, like...
Anticipation?
Yeah. I started it on a really, really stupid day, right? I had woken up for whatever reason at 4 a.m. that morning, and it was a really overcast, miserable, shitty, wet day. And I went for a walk in the woods, and after about an hour and a half of this book, I was like, I want to die. It was just really bleak and nothingy, and I hadn't really... It took a long time to get into it. I was listening to it on audiobook, and... Yeah, so it's just like, I was just completely out of sorts for the rest of the day. I had to stop and listen to something else. But then it got better.
Okay. But I think the error is that you listen to it as an audiobook. I think that's a book that's better read, actually.
Because?
Thinking back on it, it's something in... So it's written with very short, simple sentences.
Yeah, the reading age of this is, like, not high. It's more complex than that implies.
And which makes it easy to read, which probably is the reason that it was very popular as this book report assignment book.
Right.
But I don't have any good reasons for it. I just suspect that it's better read. There's also some sort of topographic stuff going on later in the book.
Hmm.
Like so these letters and printouts and so and such that will actually be
right. I can look. I bought a Storytel subscription, so I usually get both. I usually get the audiobook and the print book, so I can actually have a look at both, I think, with most. All right. Anyway, it left me very out of sorts, really just in a very odd place. It took me like a couple of weeks to kind of go back to it and finish it, and I actually really enjoyed it. Like, by the time it was done, I was like, right, this is good. This is
because it is kind of bleak and mellow and
it's very strange. It's just, I was trying to categorize it, and it's like this really weird mix of, like, on the one hand, almost Sophie's World like stuff about the kind of the physics and stuff, and the character becomes really obsessed by time and sort of related concepts. On the other hand, it's like Adrian Mole. I don't know if that was ever a thing here, but it's huge in Britain. Okay, that's your homework, is find Adrian Mole books. It's like this kind of written by this teenager. Like, the guy who's writing this is 25, I think, but the Adrian Mole books are a guy whose life is hilarious, but he doesn't realise it. And he's a teenager just obsessed by the usual things. But he takes himself very seriously, as does the protagonist in this book. And maybe a little bit of, like, The Catcher in the Rye or something like that. It's a very strange mix. Anyway, right, enough book review. Tell us about your summer.
My summer mainly consists of three things. The basement, the mountain, and the ocean.
Wow, it's like all the food groups. Okay. Are we going to take them in that order?
Okay, let's begin with the basement.
Small. Start small.
So I did not a bit, but a whole deal of DIYing in the basement. I renovated the basement. Well, we did.
That's pretty impressive, given that you also had time to do other things.
I guess so. But it is also a very Norwegian thing to do.
Right, you've got to, like, upkeep your house, right?
Yeah. And improve it.
Everything has to be better.
So we cleaned the whole thing. We painted it. We got the electricity done by professionals, of course.
Of course.
And I made a new floor. What's the thing you walk on?
Floor.
It is floor, but can it be... No, that's a ceiling.
Yeah, it's good to not confuse those. For Australian listeners, just reverse everything Knut just said.
And made everything nice and had some new furniture in and stuff.
That's pretty good. What are you going to use the space for?
Storage.
What a waste. It's not going to be like an extra room.
No, we have an extra guest room actually now.
Nice.
And also sort of this... backstead, sort of. I have a place with all the tools and stuff.
Now that you've bought all these tools, because you're doing all this, like, house renovation, you've got to have somewhere to put them, right? So, like, they get their own room. That's nice. When you did the floor, I've done, like, a laminate floor before where you slot all the bits together and you have to cut everything to fit. Is that what you did? Takes bloody ages, man.
No, not really.
Well, even with a circular saw, like, how long did it take? How big is the space?
This was not a huge space. It was like 10 square meters.
Okay, we did an entire house.
I've done an entire house.
But like it takes way longer than it should, no?
No, I don't think so.
Well, maybe not by the time you've done the rest of the house. It was my first time doing that. It was hard.
But yeah, I guess I have a good technique for it or something.
Fine. Okay, well, compare notes afterwards, or you can like share some YouTube links or whatever.
It depends, because the floor we have upstairs, here you can... It's really easy to put down one and one floor tile.
Mm-hmm.
But the floor, we bought a floor from IKEA.
Okay.
Just a cheap floor.
Yeah.
And there you had to put in the whole sort of line of tiles. The whole length. So you first had to connect them together.
Yeah.
And then put them on the...
And
that was a bit more elaborate.
That's kind of what we did before. How's the other way of doing it?
If you buy a more expensive floor, you can put down one and one tile at a time. So it's sort of faster.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Oh, now I'm trying to think what we did. Kind of a mix of both, actually. Yeah, okay. Anyway, sorry. I'm sure this is what people listen for. Floor tips. Well, I guess we'll put links in the show notes to YouTube or whatever.
My recommendation is the Pergo floor, laminate floor.
It might have been the one we had. I know you remember. Anyway, yeah. All right.
I also went to the mountains.
Yeah.
To Jotunheimen.
Yeah, well, I've been listening to Norse mythology, and so I'm like kind of, you know, this is a big deal. This is like a central pillar of like Norwegian mythology, right? Or Norse mythology generally. Were there giants? Were there, like, what happened?
Of course.
Of course.
Of course. And sheeple.
Was it really touristy?
Oh, yeah.
You're kidding.
So we went to Jotunheimen. I guess that's one of the main mountain groups. You have some others.
Some others. The whole of Norway.
But you have like Dovre, Jotunheimen, Rondane, Hardangervidda, and so on. At least in the southern part of Norway.
Yeah. And then there's like the whole of the rest of the country. That's a whole other thing. This is like a national park, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And one of the tops here is called Besseggen.
What does it mean?
I don't know. Egg, it's like a mountain ridge.
Like an edge.
Yeah. Hmm. Bess, I don't know. Hmm. We stayed at the tourist cabin called Bessheim the first night.
You weren't camping?
No.
I'm so disappointed.
And I'll tell you why. Because...
Midges.
So we took a bit of an alternative longer route to Besseggen.
You mentioned this.
Yeah. And so we walked up from sort of an other starting point. And we walked up there in the mist. So we didn't get any of the sort of the view.
No.
At least not. It cleared up a bit later in the day, but yeah. And we went up Besseggen with our dog, and so that was a fairly easy thing. But then we had to walk down again, and we sort of walked against the stream, sort of against the usual route. So people usually take a boat. They come with buses and take a boat into another tourist cabin, and they walk up this path. And part of this path is walking sort of on the ridge. So it's really narrow. So
right.
Yeah, so it's sort of very steep on both sides.
Mm.
So we have to climb down that thing.
While people are coming up it.
Yeah, and with our dog. So that was a bit complex, but we managed. And then the plan was to walk down to this other tourist cabin, and from there proceed to another tourist cabin where we would sleep.
Mm.
And we perhaps should bring a tent. Should have brought a tent, but we didn't, because we think, let's just walk for a fairly long stretch and have some comfort afterwards. Right,
not unreasonable. Not very Norwegian, but okay, I'll let it slide.
But
holidays.
We hadn't done our due diligence and really checked out the routes beforehand. So we had the sort of the a fairly notion of how long it was. And we have done lots of mountain walks before, so it's not the first time. So and this will be okay. And we have planned to, I guess, go for 25 kilometers.
Okay.
That's fine. Reasonable in a day.
Unless it's very, very mountainous, in which case it's hard to work, right?
Yeah. So, and this was because I think... I don't remember the climb from Bessheim to Bessheggen, but the second climb was like 800 meters up, just straight up.
Mm.
And then you walk up and down and up and down. But the whole thing ended up being 45 kilometers.
In one day?
In one day.
Oh, that's quite a long day.
12 and a half hour walk, 20 minutes with a pause.
Oh, God.
And I had to carry our dog in my rucksack for like 5 kilometers at the end. She was exhausted.
Yeah. Oh, no. So we're getting out of kind of hill walking and into quests at this point.
Yeah.
Wow.
And some point later that day... I seriously considered, one, that we had walked sort of off the trail, taking the wrong path, and two, should I call a helicopter to bring us down?
Oh, man.
But, we managed. And because we could have the walk been shorter, but the catch was that we had to climb down an even steeper mountainside.
Yeah.
Where they have this to help you get down. They have installed sort of what's the Norwegian? No, what's the English word for chatting? Chains?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Like something to hold, like a handrail, like a guide rail or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was a bit ambitious with sort of this our dog and being quite.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah.
Gosh. Did we learn anything?
Prepare.
Okay.
For,
check
out how the route actually is, I guess.
Like, modern preoccupation, I guess. What's the mobile coverage like? Like, if you find yourself there, can you actually find yourself on Google Maps and figure out where you are? Or were you doing old-style map and compass kind of? Or neither?
It is surprisingly good, actually. But you haven't coverage everywhere.
Mm.
And the point where my doubt started to set in, I guess that was a point where we didn't have.
Right.
But we had a general idea of where we were, but yeah.
Wow. You talked about the sound of Maltpakke.
Yeah, so I made some observations, right? Beginning with the sheeple.
Right.
That doesn't sound derogatory at all.
No, not at all, no. I'm sure people understand what you mean.
So we are these experienced mountaineers. We know how to dress up and the right gear and so on, except the tent, which I have but don't bother to carry all the way. When we sort of met the tourists, they had umbrellas, which is really weird
that
in the mountains.
That is quite weird, isn't it?
But
I mean, I get it, but it's quite weird.
Well, it might just work.
Not if it's windy. This is Norway.
No, that's true.
There is wind.
But you could also use it as sort of a walking stick.
I guess. If it's like a proper long... If it's one of those little foldable ones, then it's just going to blow away.
Yeah.
Or turn inside out and then blow away.
Jogging pants, which might work, but not when
wet,
it rains.
Yeah.
All kind of weird shoes.
Like what?
And new shoes, like new trainers and stuff.
Like cool trainers, like stuff you'd wear in the city.
And you're just thinking, well, your feet is going to be... And also, you also have brand new hiking shoes, which also is...
It's like a dead giveaway, right?
Yeah, and also your feet will hurt.
Well, maybe it depends on the shoes, but yeah.
I never had a hiking shoe that didn't hurt sort of the first.
Okay, yeah, we need to walk it in. Not convinced.
This is my experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine is different, but okay, that's good. That's why we're here.
But yeah, and what's funny that you have this sort of posters on the route, and it says, if you have spent more than 4 hours getting up here, you should probably considering turning back, or else it will be dark when you arrive at the top.
So that's actually really sensible.
Yeah, it's helpful.
Yeah.
But it also is because we spend a lot of resources and money to get tourists down from the mountains with helicopters and save them. And
I've read
and
about this from Preikestolen and places
like that. Yeah, for example.
Yeah.
So we have started to do some preemptive measures. So at Preikestolen, we actually have 2 people that lives there during the season and sort of considering people and advise them to, you should probably turn back now with your infant.
It's a very kind of, I'm imagining this person, like this sort of mad prophet person going, turn back, there is doom ahead.
No, but it's really, they also have blankets and food if people are hungry and so on.
Yeah, blister plasters.
And it has had a huge impact on the kind of, sort of decreased the need for helicopters.
That's good. Yeah. It costs a lot of money to get helicopters to take off and fly around and land.
One mission like that is like 30,000 kroner or something.
Yeah, I can believe that. The fuel alone, just to keep that in the air,
I don't think we invoice the people, actually. So
well, that's nice. That makes us
this
better than the animals.
This is from your taxpayer dollars, right?
Yeah. So. No, it's good. Matpakka.
Yeah, so I mentioned the tourist cabins.
Mm.
And do you know what it is?
I know what the kind of the déjeuner kind of things are, where you like, you basically, I don't know if you have to book them or not, but you kind of join, you become a member, and then you can just kind of rock up at whatever cabin.
Yeah, it's both. You can book, and some of them you probably should, because they're really popular, but others, you, if you are a member of DNT, you can just sort of, you will have the code and you can just stay there if you come there.
Was this where you were staying?
We stayed at some of the more popular spots. And I guess there are cabins, but it's more like mountain hotels, but not the hotel. But
what's the difference between that and a youth hostel?
It's more like a youth hostel.
Okay.
But you will have your own rooms and stuff.
Mm. I think youth hostels increasingly do their own rooms thing now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, because you both have a mix of native and tourists from abroad.
Mm.
And in the morning, because a concept in these cabins is that you can, if you pay like 50 kroner, you can make yourself a matpakke.
Cool.
Sort of a lunch.
Right.
With bread, dry bread and some spread, right?
Mm. Brown cheese.
Brown cheese.
Obviously.
Yeah, of course. And the way you pack this matpakke is with paper.
Of course.
And when you have like 70 people packing their lunches with paper, you'll have this enormous sound of, because it's a bit stiff paper.
Right.
It's very noisy.
It's like greaseproof paper that you use for baking, right? It's that kind of, Oh, that's amazing. Is it like crunching through autumn leaves or something? Is it that kind of sound?
Times 70.
Oh, that's amazing. Like a flock of paper butterflies or something.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I also observed some interesting brown cheese slicing techniques. And my favorite was the underhanded. Because they have this
cheese slicer. Okay, you're going to have to describe this.
Yeah, you have this cheese slicer. Norwegian invention, by the way.
Found in every Airbnb ever. There are two in this office.
I guess you have to describe what I do. So you hold it like that.
Okay,
and
palm
then you
up.
Slide the cheese over it.
This is the Norwegian equivalent of the inverse aeropress technique, right? Yeah. This is like, okay.
Which makes sense, because I guess the slice will fall down on on the bread.
This is amazing. All right, so imagine, if you will, the cheese slicer is... So normally what you do is you hold the cheese and you drag the cheese slicer over it from the top. And what Knut just demonstrated is like the reverse, where you have the cheese slicer... I got to think about this now. You have the cheese slicer upside down and then you push the cheese across it.
Yeah.
Is that more or less like injury prone, do you think, that kind of technique?
Well, it depends on how large the cheese is.
I guess if the cheese is down to the last bit, then you could like slice open your whole palm. But yeah.
But also you use the weight of the cheese as... It's actually more easy to do that.
Telling me there's like a generation of Norwegians out there who are going, well, I'd love to eat some brown cheese, but I got to tell you, this is just too heavy. I'm just not able to slice this.
But when you do the regular way, you have to push... Well, you shouldn't actually push the cheese slicer down the cheese. You just drag it on the top.
Yeah, yeah. It should be gentle. Yeah. Well, it depends. Like, if the cheese is very warm, sometimes you have to apply more pressure because, like... It's hard to, you know, otherwise it just kind of... Bleh. Mm.
But and the most wrong way you can do it is taking like an undergrip on the cheese slicer. I struggle to... Like, if you want to stab someone with a cheese slicer, right?
Frequently.
Yeah. Like the psycho
way. Okay, yeah.
And then... You drag it over. So you will have a cheese half pipe, right?
Right. What kind of animal would even do that? Is this people who hold their cutlery the same way? Like, okay, right.
I have people in my family that...
I'm disturbed. We'll play Stargrams or something. I don't know.
I guess we have to revive our YouTube channel.
I guess so. This is how the cheese slice. And then you can demonstrate the inverse method. I like it. Okay.
Also, I discovered the concept of the juksetopp, which is a candidate for the word of the week. It's a new word. I made it.
Is this a false summit on a mountain?
Yeah.
Good word.
Do you know it?
No, false summit I'd never heard of it, but it makes total sense.
Yeah, because, there's the summit. There's the top.
Yeah.
No, it isn't. There's always a new top.
Right. There are mountains in Scotland that do exactly this. It's just false summit after false summit. It's immensely frustrating. But what a great word.
Yeah. So I guess that was the mountains.
That's pretty good. Did you have nice weather at all?
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
not nice, not too bad, I guess.
What did you do after that?
Well, I went to Scotland, actually.
You didn't just go to Scotland. Qualify that. There's a better verb.
Yeah, so the last keyword is the ocean. So I went to Scotland over the ocean.
But again, not like walking Jesus style-y, but like you sailed there, right?
Yeah, we sailed.
Like with actual sails, not using an engine.
Well, we used an engine because...
I'm so disappointed.
Because of the weather, because we didn't have... that much wind.
Mm. I have so many questions just about the basic physics of sailing to Scotland from Norway. My instinct is that getting back was much easier because the prevailing wind usually goes Scotland to Norway and not the other way.
I guess that's true, but actually we had favorable wind title.
Yes.
The wind was in our favor when we went to Scotland, and the forecast promised that it would actually turn when we...
Conveniently.
But it didn't, kind of.
Hmm.
So that meant, it did, but not in the right direction, and it was too weak to really sail, real, but we used sails and engine combined. Right.
You got to go through the best named shipping area.
Okay.
Viking. So all the areas of off Britain have, all the shipping areas have different names. A thing called the shipping forecast, which I don't know if you've come across, which is a thing that goes out on the radio in the UK, which just basically gives the shipping, the different areas around the coast, the sort of weather forecast and what the seas will be like and so on. And it's kind of hypnotic to listen to. It's got kind of, it's got cult status, basically, as a thing that people listen to who are not sailors and who are not about to go to sea, but it's just kind of gentle. They just talk about the different areas and they have all these different names. So you went through Viking to get to Shetland.
Didn't know that, actually. Because on the map plots, it's like, lots of weird names, but mostly something to do with bank, because there's a fishing areas, right. I guess. But yeah.
I mean, maybe Norway has its own names for all these areas, and maybe they're different areas. I don't even know.
No, not on the map. It would be, I guess, the native names. Actually, yeah. The map is in English, even. So
yeah. Okay.
Anyways, so we went from Sunnmøre, which is a bit north in the western part of Norway, and spent many hours to sort of just get out to the actual ocean, like in the fjord, because we started in a fjord, of course, and it was kind of interesting to be out in the open ocean
with nothing else.
Yeah, well, there is something. But there's no land, right? So you just have ocean everywhere, the full 360 degrees.
How big is this boat, by the way?
I think it was 45 feet. So not...
What are you doing giving me measurements in feet?
Boats are measured in feet.
Even here?
Yeah, everywhere.
Well, that's just fucked
that's
up.
That's the official boat measurement.
Fine.
So it has this cabin under the... deck and a steering house and actually four sails, sort of four masts, or not really four masts, two masts, but four sails. This was another thing. I learned lots of new words, not in English, in Norwegian, but sort of sailing terms and
nautical vocabulary.
And yeah,
cool.
So we were five people. Mm. So my father, my brothers, and my brother-in-law, or to be, I guess.
Is he still your brother-in-law to be after this journey?
He has accepted now.
That's good. Acceptance makes things easier. Yeah.
And he's a mechanic, so that was handy.
Oh, that is handy. Yeah. Well, did you need the mechanic?
Yeah, you have to look after the motor. Mm. Running the motor for 40 hours, you have to do some, So, yeah, and, well, out in the open sea, first of all, the time changes, partly because you have to do the shifts. So typically, you have a three-hour shift, and you sleep for 6 hours. Mm-hmm. Or, well, ideally, you do that, but, yeah. So... you lose track of time.
Because you're in this rota.
Yeah. And also, you have to constantly balance. So I got a bit seasick, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Which is not fun.
No.
It wasn't too bad, but you feel constantly queasy.
Well, that's not great. And did you have that before?
Not really.
Hmm.
Because I grew up spending time on sort of sailboats and stuff like that, and I was actually one of those who were a bit cavalier about not being seasick.
Right.
So this was a
humbling.
Yeah, I guess so. But you develop these techniques of how to sort of position yourself in the right place, and especially when you are waking up. So the trick is also always facing straight in front or the back of the boat.
Wait, do you line up your body to sleep? Do you line up your body with the front and the back? Like, do you sleep end to end of the boat or side on?
End to end.
Right.
And sleeping was not a problem. That was fine. Mm. Yeah. But you also notice, you get this close connection with how the weather changes.
Yeah.
And where the wind is and all this stuff. That was interesting. And my brother is a surfer, so he's way into weather and how it changes and how it will affect the waves and so on. So that was quite fascinating. Do you see the clouds back there? Mm. That means that in a couple of hours this will... Oh, okay.
Nice.
That's cool. And the birds. We had bird companions all the way over.
That's cool. Why do they do that?
They live on the sea.
Yeah, I get that. But like, did they kind of like... sometimes birds follow boats.
Yeah.
Why?
Because that was bird. What birds do, I guess. I don't know.
But why?
But also, we had some sightings of whales.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you take pictures?
Really bad ones.
Yeah, these are like 2 pixels in the distance, right? Sure. Right.
I have a video. I can.
Oh, amazing.
It. Yeah.
That's really cool. Do you know what kind of whales they were?
Yeah, and the don't know the English names, but the first one was a spekhogger. That's like the free willy whale.
Like a killer whale?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the second was something called a grindval.
Oh, I've heard of that, but I don't know what it is.
It's not that big. Yeah. It's really
small.
Is it
actually a whale?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Wow.
And also, we sailed sort of in the middle of the Norwegian and, I guess, UK oil.
So lots of rigs.
Yeah.
Were they lit at night? Did you see like...
Yeah, it was like large Christmas trees.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was also interesting.
It is. Weird. I've flown over those at night and it's very strange.
So we got to see them by night on the way to Shetland and by day on the way back.
Hmm. That's a weird mix of stuff.
Yeah. And also I went to Shetland. So we had adventures there as well.
Tell us about Shetland.
So we went to Ludwig, which is... And Shetland is in Scotland.
Yes.
So I've been to Scotland now.
Well done.
And the first thing we did, take a guess...
Well, I saw pictures. You had a beer and ate fish and chips.
Yeah.
But you drank Irish beer.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I don't know. Ask my father. I suspect my father believes that it is Scottish. I don't know.
Is that him with the beard in the picture?
Yeah.
Right.
And a pipe.
And a pipe?
Yeah.
Old school.
Yeah. It is actually a pipe.
Hmm.
And so we arrived there like 11 in the night, and we had the fish and chips.
That's all the food you can buy at that time of night, right?
And one of my brothers, the one who is not a surfer, he is not that into fish. So he ordered burger with fries. So the first question was, do you want it battered?
Right.
And he were... no.
Yes, that is an option. Welcome to Scotland.
But he expected a hamburger, right? And what he got was this patty and fries.
That's how we roll.
So that was a difference, I guess.
I have to ask you about what do you do when you sail into a foreign country? How do you declare that you are now in that foreign country if you arrive by sea on a small boat?
You have this radio.
Okay.
And you tune into channel 16, and when you are closer, you call into the port, the Lervik port, and you say, this is Lama Alpha Victor Foxtrot, and we are sailing into Lervik on course 240. We want to moor at the Victoria Pier.
That's very specific.
Is that okay?
Do you say where you're coming from?
Yeah, well, I guess so. Hmm. You don't have to, but yeah.
But like, once you're in port, you're in the UK.
Yeah.
What happens with like customs? What happens with some kind of passport border or something?
Yeah, so you go to
the UK for anyone. Well, actually, everyone knows this who's in Schengen, right? But like, there's in a lot of Europe, you can just travel freely. You don't need to show your passport because the UK is an asshole and also an island. You do when you cross from the rest of Europe.
Well, you wait to the day after, and the port authority opens at 9 a.m., and you go there, and you fill out some forms, and you show your passport, and,
and that's
off
it.
We go.
Okay.
It's way easier to arrive by boat than plane, actually.
I think, yeah. Do you have to let them know when you're leaving?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you say to the port authority, or to the port over the radio, we are now leaving Victoria Pier. We are headed for Norway. And yeah.
So it's like air traffic control, but on the water. Okay, cool. Shetland, Lerwick.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I haven't fully, I struggle to summarize my impressions, but I have some small ones, I guess.
Tell anything that was surprising.
Yeah, so the burger with fries, the first one, there were poetry on the toilets.
Formal or informal?
Formal. Mm. Sanctioned poetry, actually.
Interesting.
And I will post, I guess.
Not like every toilet, like public toilets, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
And we went to the museum, like the marine boat museum in Lerwick. And surprising, being Scotland, it was free. Or perhaps not surprising.
Welcome to Scotland.
And second surprising thing, the sort of the museum person began to talk in Norwegian.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Were they actually Norwegian?
No.
Oh, that's even better.
But Lerwick is a really popular destination for Norwegian boat people, I guess. Which you also saw in many of the signs. So it would it would be written in English and Norwegian.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, there's a long history of like traffic between Shetland and Norway.
Even there was a hairdresser, and it said in Norwegian that that we have the Norwegian hairdress master from 2007 or something. I can post pictures.
Oh, that's great, but you'll get a style that's no longer current, like 10 years out of date.
So I drove. We rented a car.
On the wrong side of the road.
And that was counterintuitive, but I managed.
Well done.
And so we drove over an airstrip.
Huh.
So in the southern part of Shetland, you have this little small airport, and the road goes over the landing strip. So there's a sign, if these lights are on, you should stop the car, because beware, there's a plane coming.
Right.
And I actually did when we went back. That was interesting. And we looked on birds. So they have the, what's it called in... I think, is it Puff?
Puffin,
yeah. They were cute. And we had those cute in Norway also.
Oh, I haven't seen them here.
At Runda.
Only there?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Because I think they are endangered.
Not in Scotland, are they?
Yeah, everywhere.
Huh.
Because I think they mainly live in Shetland and Rondona.
They should stop smoking.
They're a bit useless.
They're cute, though.
Yeah. They are not afraid of people.
No, then maybe that's the problem.
And when they have eaten, they struggle to get up in the air.
They're like the giant panda of birds, basically. They're just like, they're not helping themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, also, sort of, we have talked about how when you are in the mountains, you greet each other.
Mm.
You also do that at sea.
Mm, how do you do that?
You wave.
Oh.
Or, for example, being out in sort of the oil field, you have to state your name and purpose, sort of.
Very formal.
For the standby ship.
It's like trying to enter the Death Star.
And we actually, so we said, oh, we are here. We headed for Larvik at course 240.
Yeah.
Okay. Just don't hit the rig.
Right.
Okay. We'll try to.
How do you know when you're in like the limits of a, like the perimeter of a, an oil field or an, what do you call them?
So they have security, sort of a security area around. Mm. It's typically 1 nautical mile.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in the maps and the map plotter. And we have GPS, so we know exactly where we are. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And, yeah.
Did you eat anything else that was... typically
not
Scottish.
Fried.
Not fried. Everything is fried. It's Scotland.
Yeah, no, we had a
deep fried
decent,
in batter.
Dinner at Hayes Dock, which is the restaurant to the museum, which were recommended. It was cod with potatoes and sun-dried tomatoes and so on. We didn't have any haggis or that kind of stuff. My brother wanted to have a fried Snickers bar, but...
Yeah, why not?
He missed that somehow, yeah. Also, weird vowels.
In Shetland?
Yeah.
They have two A's.
Yeah, and they had the O. So we ate at Fjordå. And I also saw a couple of O's.
Huh, interesting. On place names or?
Yeah, or sort of shop names or something. Mm. And also the use of da, as in Davil or and so on.
Yeah. I only know this from Scottish fiddle music, which, like the Shetland stuff, tends to have unusual names. Very Nordic.
Mm.
Cool. Would you recommend Shetland as a place to go?
Yeah. If you had stayed there for one day more, I guess we would do some walking and hiking.
Mm.
Seems like a good place for that.
Yeah. Cool. I had so many questions about even just the journey, actually. I can't think of any more right now.
I guess we also have to close.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, yeah, we should probably do that. We'd follow up and stuff.
Quick ones. How did Knut cope with reduced coffee circumstances on the boat? We didn't have reduced coffee circumstances.
Did you have as much coffee as possible?
Well, you sort of... Your lust for coffee and food is reduced a bit because of the queasiness, but we had a press, sort of this French press thing. Yeah, the troll Dick is risen.
Yes.
You can go there.
You can.
It was successful.
It's glued
they had
back on.
Actually caught one of the people.
Really? I didn't know that. That's cool. Do we have any indication of motivation or just for the lulls?
I don't know.
All right.
I guess we should mention that the podcast Roderick on the Line, which I recommend, dealt with the... what's the Latin word now again?
Nycthemeron.
Yeah.
Greek, not Latin.
Yeah, of course. Ugh, embarrassing. Which we have talked about ages ago,
yes.
I guess, many døgn ago.
The period of 24 hours.
Mm. And our prime minister kissed a sea lion.
In the name of publicity, because there's an election coming.
Mm. That happened.
Yeah.
And you finally sustained a cheese slicer injury.
It was only a matter of time. I made it a whole year without one, and then just after the year mark.
Yeah, but now we have the answer. You do the
inverse Brunos method. Yeah. Yeah, title. Yeah.
And I guess the last thing is listener email.
Yes. You got
there
it.
There seems to be a surplus of Chrises out in the world.
No, so. we are legion, but there's that's exactly the right number of Chrises.
And one of them wrote in by way of a form at a website that can be found at...
My brain fell out. Small differences on farsight.fm.
Hi, guys. I am in need of some sage advice. You come to the right place, I guess. I have to anonymize.
Yes,
this,
you do.
I guess. Having acquired a new job based in ... and thus not having to commute, good on you, I now have the free time to take on an evening class to pick up a Scandinavian language. Parentheses, post-Brexit escape plan and C, and et cetera, I guess?
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder about
and et cetera. The ampersand C is et cetera.
Fancy. I'm about 40% of the way through Duolingo's Danish course.
We're so sorry.
And I was planning to using the evening classes to get to grips with speaking and grammar, I guess, Danish.
Yeah.
I would not have done that. frustratingly, I guess so, this year in ... has dropped the options of studying Danish. I guess now people can triangle it where it is.
Maybe.
And only offers Norwegian and Swedish. The other universities in ... helpfully do not offer courses in Scandinavian languages. This is war on humanities, by the way. Of the available language options, which one would you say overlaps most with Danish, I guess, between Swedish and Norwegian? And we have our linguist here, Chris Atherton. What would you recommend?
Well, we talked about this a little bit, and your gut instinct was that, obviously Norwegian, and I don't know how much you said that, because Norway, but actually, you're right, written Danish and written Norwegian are really similar, really, really similar, because until relatively recently, written Norwegian was Danish, and that shows. So I'm reading a Danish book, and it's not that big of an effort, so they're very similar. But the other thing was, in Sweden, on holiday, I just spoke Norwegian all the time. I can't remember how to speak Swedish anymore. I could, and now it's just all Norwegian. And that went fine. That was basically fine the whole time. So with Norwegian, what you're doing is you're buying access to effectively to Danish and Swedish. You can read the Danish fine. There's more problems with the speaking, which is very different. But spoken word Swedish and Norwegian is... not interchangeable, but like mutually compatible at the level of like being able to buy things in shops or order food or have like a short conversation about something. So that works really well. So Norwegian is kind of a passport to all of that. And in addition, you can actually read Swedish pretty well. Like it's, again, it's not the same, but it's comprehensible. So yeah, Norwegian for the win. That's what you should do.
Yeah. So your argument seems to mostly be with compatibility, right?
Well, like keeping as many options open as possible. Yeah. Like Norway has what, 5 million people. Denmark has about the same. Sweden has what, 8?
Yeah,
10 million
like
tops.
Yeah.
So like if you want all your Scandinavian options to remain wide open, then Norwegian is a really, really good choice. Apparently it's also much easier to learn. It's like the easiest of the three for an English speaker to learn.
Yeah. And but if we should employ the Sapir-Whorf theorem here.
Then or Stockholm syndrome possibly. I've been assimilated. No, go on.
Because this will undoubtedly affect your how you think. And would you prefer? Well, this is difficult to answer. But if you could choose again, do you prefer the Norwegian mentality, the Danish mentality, or the Swedish?
Well, I've only lived in.
Which will bring you more happiness?
I don't have a fair basis for comparison, right?
Well, Norway is the most happiest place in the world, so I guess.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. No brainer, right?
Well, go Norwegian then.
Yeah.
Join our podcast. Yeah.
Yes. Become one of us. Totally.
As long as your name is Chris, I guess you can be on the
You
podcast.
Can thrive. Look, I'm living proof. I'm living proof. You can begin. Sorry.
So, yeah. So thanks for the question. I hope this has been helpful.
Right. Yeah, we hope so. Write us back and tell us how it goes.
I guess being the first episode after the holiday, we haven't obviously had any homework. So word of the week, culture pick of the week. I can just read some nautical terms I have learned.
Oh, would you? That'd be cool.
Klivert, stag, bom, skjøt. I thought that...
These all sound like
more.
Norwegian swear words.
Yeah.
Very Anglo-Saxon.
Vante.
I need translations for these after.
Jib, but I guess that works
that's
in
jib,
English.
Jib, yeah. Boom is boom, right? Like yeah. The, yeah.
Fokke.
Nice. What is that?
Mezan.
A mizzen in English. What's a fokker?
Fokke.
Fokke. Okay.
That's one of the sails in the front of the boat.
Okay. The fore something.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, I guess that's what's...
Sailing people, write us in and tell us what all these things are.
I didn't learn to swear.
What kind of sailor are you?
A bad one, I guess.
Yeah.
I learned to sail, though.
That's
perhaps
good.
Perhaps the swearing comes afterwards.
Maybe that's like level two.
Mm. And also the saying, and like, this is perhaps my cultural pick of the week. En hånd for båten, en hånd for deg selv. One hand for the boat, one hand for yourself.
One-handed sailing sounds like a euphemism.
And I guess this is a security prevention thing. So,
Don't fall overboard.
Yeah.
Don't be so
when you are
optat level. Yeah. Don't be so preoccupied with sailing
you
that you forget your personal
sails,
safety.
Keep one hand for raising the sail and the other for keeping yourself on the boat.
Good rule.
Yeah.
Did you have to clip yourself to things?
No.
With a rope?
It wasn't that kind of a sail.
Okay.
I would have needed to if we had a storm or something, I guess, but we didn't.
Cool.
Do you have anything?
I think it was probably the Erlendloa, I guess, which is pretty Norwegian all the way through. Everything I did actually over the summer was really quite Norwegian, so yeah. I read the paper every day for like to not forget how to Norwegian.
Chris's cultural pick of the week. Read the paper every day.
If it's in a second language, that is a cultural pick.
All right.
That's it.
I guess next week. That will be an exciting episode next week.
Because?
We are doing what we actually plan to do this
right.
For this episode.
Right. We can talk about food
and
drink and supermarkets. And we're going to taste food.
Yeah.
I'm leaving you a care package.
I'm so thankful.
Before I go. We're in the same office today.
Well,
we haven't mentioned this.
No. I think I'm thankful. Well, time will show, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm a bit worried for the Marmite thing, if that's a part of this thing.
Couldn't possibly say. I think maybe Marmite's going to be your homework this week, so that when you come back next week, you can talk about it. I have to give you very specific instructions on the Marmite. There you go.
Ooh.
You'll love it. Or hate it.
Right.
We should pack up.
Until then, ha det bra. Takk for at du hørte på.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.